Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, November 4th, welcome to the program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
Avi, it is Election Day 2025, and voters in our region and around the country, they're headed to the polls. The big races in our area, though, the race for governor of New Jersey. Democrat Mikey Sherrill versus Republican Jack Cittarelli. That's on the ballot. In Pennsylvania, the big focus is on the state Supreme Court retention race. We have three justices who ran as Democrats 10 years ago up for another 10-year term. We also have some down ballot races for district attorney, the Bucks County Sheriff's race. That's been all the buzz. And so today we've got two journalists who are following these contests very closely that will join us for the first half of the big talk. We'll be talking about New Jersey. And then for the second half, we'll dig into Pennsylvania. And of course, we want to hear from you, our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere. Our questions of the day: what's motivating you to vote this year? And what race or races, whether they be local or national, which ones are you watching most closely? The number to participate is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, share the video, but also leave your comments in the chat.
Again, what's motivating you to vote this year, or perhaps not vote?
That part.
What races are you watching most closely? It could be in our region. It could be maybe a little up the highway in that city just to the north of us. A lot of us watching that city today. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. A trio of local news stories to start us off, Cherry. And we wanted to highlight some reporting in the Inquirer about a new street drug that's causing major issues in Philadelphia. The drug is medetomidine. It's intended for veterinary use, but it's being added to fentanyl on the street. It was first found in Philly in early 2024, but by early 2025, this drug was found in 70% of illicit opioid samples tested in the city, according to the Inquirer, a massive and sudden rise. This seems to have replaced xylazine, which was notorious for causing flesh wounds. Medetomidine doesn't cause these wounds, but it does cause severe withdrawal symptoms. And in the time since it was first detected, ER visits for drug-related withdrawal have surged in Philadelphia. And that's, again, according to Inquirer data. Local ER doctors have been scrambling to find drug combinations to combat these really severe withdrawal symptoms, which can include uncontrolled shaking and dangerous blood pressure spikes.
Yeah, this is very scary because we thought that Trank or xylazine was bad, but authorities say this is worse. And according to the Inquirer, it causes sedation so intense that users commonly black out. And Narcan or naloxone doesn't work. So a lot of times people who are first responders or folks in the neighborhood, I know I have Narcan at the house. You may run outside, see somebody ODing, you try to help them, but this doesn't work. And so, you know, you have to bring in hospital authorities. So, and what's so frightening about this is that a lot of people who are suffering from addiction, they have no idea what they're getting themselves into, and they learn about it in real time. And sometimes it could be too late.
It's just the latest example of the whack-a-mole nature of trying to stop the drug epidemic here in Philadelphia and cities all across the country. And everyone talks about trying to restrict the supply, and understandably so. But you can restrict the supply, for instance, of
xylazine. And
then xylazine.
Put toxins in it.
But you know, what I'm saying is that you could restrict one additive, in this case xylazine, and there's some speculation that that is what's caused now this surge in the use of medetomidine. And so it just feels like one thing after another. If you don't get to those root causes,
these
additives keep popping up in the supply.
So scary. Great reporting by the Philadelphia Inquirer. Second story for today. A number of Philadelphia area restaurants have been flooded with one-star Google reviews, and it's part of a scam originating from overseas. Here's how the scam works. The scammer, usually based in Bangladesh, Pakistan, or other country, they will target a restaurant and post dozens of one-star reviews that will tank the restaurant's overall review.
So they might have been a 4.5. Now they're a 3.5.
Exactly, which impacts foot traffic. Yeah. And so one of the posts may tell the business owner to type in a WhatsApp number and to contact the reviewer in order to get that one-star review removed. Of course, the scammer will demand money.
So it's like, shame you got all those one-star reviews. I can wipe those for you.
Yeah, or I can give you five-star reviews, whatever you want, but $250, right? And this is exactly what happened to several Philadelphia restaurants, including the Palizzi Social Club, Her Place Supper Club, among others, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer and NBC 10. And these fake reviews, sometimes they'll complain about food or service that the restaurant doesn't even offer.
Yeah, which is crazy. How does that get through this screening process? There was one where they, like, someone was complaining about burnt tacos, and it was like a Mediterranean restaurant.
Place. Yeah. And it's just so interesting. All of this, of course, is illegal.
Also, who burns tacos? That's not something that happens to tacos, by the way. So do some research, scammers.
I know. And the people who are customers, too. Take a look. But by the way, the FTC has deemed all of this type of these fake reviews illegal. But of course, these scammers are overseas, far outside of the jurisdiction of our authorities. And so, you know, these restaurants, they have no choice. All they can do is really flag the fake reviews and hope that Google takes them down fast enough. But, you know, folks have said, look, don't engage with these people. Don't pay them because all it does is feed the beast.
Yeah, but the liability, it seems, in the law lies with the scammers. So you have to pursue them for legal action.
And they're
in
Bangladesh.
Yeah, but you're not going to find those people.
No.
And then the platform, Google in this case, has no liability, it seems, no culpability. And I feel like as long as that's the case, I don't see how you really stop this from happening. Now, I don't know what type of regulatory framework you could create to hold Google liable, but it seems Google claims, according to the Inquirer's reporting, that they actually catch most of these fake reviews on the front end using some, you know, AI detection that it's like a black box. We don't know what the heck it is. Mm-hmm. So that's what they claim. We have no way to check that. But they have no liability for the ones that get through. And you just have to go to them and hope that they take action. That just seems like a not a workable system.
And the bottom line is it impacts foot traffic. People do rely on those reviews.
You use the reviews?
Yeah.
Especially when you're in another city. Like if I'm in Philly, I don't care about the Google reviews because I know the spots and I can go on the, you know,
you
the
do
best
know,
of.
He does know the spots.
Yeah, you
he
go the best the of spot. List. You know where to look. When you go to a different city, when you're a tourist, you're looking at the Google Maps and you see, oh, there's a 4.3 and there's a 4.7 and you look at the number. I mean, that's I do that.
Yeah.
And if I saw a 3.5, I wouldn't be going there.
No, for sure. So, you know, shout out to those restaurants. I hope you guys get the situation fixed.
Absolutely. Let's fix the situation overall.
Mm-hmm.
Alphabet, Google. Okay. Now let's go from bad internet to good internet.
Yes.
Okay. Billy Penn's Julia Binswanger profiled a woman who has been going viral for doing ASMR in a Philly accent. Now, I could try to describe this, but let's just hear a clip.
What short are you gonna do? It's too expensive anymore. It's ridiculous. He's gonna get the pretzel tray for Shawnee's baptism.
Okay, so Shawnee's baptism. That is actor and comedian Betsy Kenny, whose whispery hoagie mouth videos have been a sensation. Kenny has only been on TikTok for like a few months, but she's an immediate hit. She told Billy Penn, quote, people love ASMR because it's very calming. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, I think it would be funny to do a Philly accent because people think it's the opposite of calming. What do you think about the Philly ASMR videos,
Cherry? I actually was cracking up. I really think it's really funny. There's one, though, and I tell you that the sound of, you know, water ice getting squished around.
You didn't like that one?
I did not like that one. And you know, I have a gag reflex. I'm like, I can't do it.
You don't like the scraping?
I don't like
the
ice? That scraping sound. But I do like the whispers. It calms me. And, you know, I love to hear books being whispered. It's, I don't know, it's very relaxing. It helps me combat insomnia.
Really? You would fall asleep to Betsy Kenny?
I would. And I mean, maybe she could read a book and with a Philly accent. That would be really cool.
Yeah, like Goodnight Moon.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
That was really good. I'm okay.
By the way, I have to say this. Betsy Kenny, the woman who does these videos, is a comedian and an actor, and she is in an upcoming WHYY TV 12 show called The Good Neighbor Club. So check out Betsy Kenny and The Good Neighbor
Club.
Go
ahead, Betsy.
I also have to point out, by the way, that there's a little bit of like a bumper crop of women on the internet.
Hilarious
doing,
women.
Doing funny Philly characters online. There's Olivia Herman, who does Philly Mom. Mm-hmm. A woman named Amanda Yoa does a great character called Pam from Port Richmond. There was this woman back in the day, Jennifer Childs, who did Patsy, the South Philly stoop lady. And they all do like the heavy accent and all the character quirks of like, you know, South Philly, Port Richmond.
It's like somebody's auntie or neighbor. I love it.
I love it. They're so good. I don't know why there's a bumper crop of these, but keep them coming. We are thoroughly entertained. Thank you to the funny Philly people on the internet.
We need some lightness in life. We absolutely. We really do.
And transitioning now to politics, I'm not going to say light to dark. I'm not going to say it.
It's not dark.
I'm not going to say it. We want to know what's motivating you to vote this year. It's election day. What races are you watching most closely? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org, YouTube, Facebook. How you doing? Drop a comment in the chat.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back, listeners and voters, to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. It is election day, and voters are heading to the polls all across the country to cast their ballots in a myriad of races. But the big one in our region is the New Jersey race for governor. Democrat Mikey Sherrill made her final pitch to voters over the last few days. The DNC sent out big names to rally voters, including former President Barack Obama.
You've got a candidate for governor who's a proven fighter, who's got a track record of getting stuff done. Somebody who sees you and knows your struggles and will work for you every single day.
And on the Republican side, three-time gubernatorial candidate Jack Cittarelli stumped hard throughout the Garden State, and President Donald Trump appeared via phone at a virtual tele-rally in New Jersey to whip up enthusiasm for Cittarelli.
Tomorrow is election day in your state, and you need to go out and vote for Jack Cittarelli, who's a great guy, a friend of mine, a great guy, a very successful man who wants to put all of his efforts now into really saving New Jersey, making it great again.
And in Pennsylvania, stakes are high as three state Supreme Court justices, all Democrats, are on the ballot as part of the judicial retention vote. There's also down ballot races for district attorney, municipal judges, and a whole lot more at stake in the Commonwealth this election day.
But to start, let's jump back to New Jersey. Nikita Buryakov is government and politics reporter for the New Jersey Monitor. Nikita's going to be our guide this hour to all things New Jersey. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And for you, our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere, we would love to hear from you. Question of the day is the following. What's motivating you to vote this year? What race or races, local or national, are you watching most closely? Melinda on Facebook says, Mom Donnie in NYC, let's go. We won't be talking about it, but if that's the race you're watching, feel free to comment. 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org, YouTube, or Facebook. Drop a comment in the chat.
And so, Nikita, last night, President Donald Trump, you know, stumped for about 8 minutes for Jack Cittarelli. Talk about the last few days as the candidates on both sides have made their final case to New Jersey voters. Is it working to rally turnout?
Well, it does look like turnout this year is going to be a little bit higher than it was back in 2021 when the state had its last gubernatorial election. We can get some sense of this just by looking at the pre-election day vote. So this year, there have been about 1.4 million. Now, that's a lot of voting. It's a little bit less than the 1.9 million we saw in last year's presidential race, but Democrats have built up a fairly similar lead. Then, like now, they were up about 300,000 votes before polls even opened this morning. Wow.
And so that number, that 1.4 million turnout number in the early vote, although lower than obviously a presidential year, you're saying it's a good number compared to 4 years ago, 2021, the last time there's a gubernatorial election. Of course, caveats apply here. That was a COVID, kind of a COVID election. There's all sorts of stuff going on. But the observers you're talking to look at that 1.4 million and say, we feel like enthusiasm's pretty high for an off-year election.
It's pretty high, yeah. And we can see this also in the early, in the in-person vote that we're seeing this morning. Granted, a lot of those numbers are not out yet, and I haven't really seen data from the state's largest counties, but it looks like turnout is up.
Yeah, and so, Nikita, what have you been hearing from folks over the past few days as far as what is really driving voters to the polls?
In New Jersey, Every year, it's always the question of affordability. The state has a very high cost of living, and both campaigns have made lowering that cost of living a centerpiece of their campaign.
Going back to the turnout for a second, Nikita, who's encouraged by the high turnout? Are both sides claiming victory on that, or is one side in particular feeling bullish because they're seeing those early numbers?
Looking at the early numbers, I'd feel good if I were a Democrat. Like I mentioned, their lead that they built up in pre-election day voting is almost the same as the lead that they had last year. And, you know, it being the case that turnout last year was maybe 30% higher than it is looking like it'll be this year, at least that's the case in the pre-election day vote. You know, I feel like Democrats are in a pretty good position.
And granted, just to like remind folks, Democrats did carry the state. Kamala Harris did defeat Donald Trump, not by maybe as big a margin as they hoped, but it was still a win. And so you're saying Democrats look at these numbers and say, we think we're on track for at least another win, even if it's a single digits win. Is that kind of the feeling you're getting?
Precisely. And to put it into sharper relief, Democrats' early votes were 77% more numerous than Republicans this year. Mm. 4 years ago, that number was 55%. And that was also a very tight race.
Mm. So interesting. And one of the factoids that we learned when we talked about New Jersey a couple weeks ago was that it's been 60 years since one party was able to secure the governor's mansion three elections in a row. And so if Democrats are able to pull this out, this would be the first time in decades. And so can you talk about the significance of this race and what's really at stake here as folks go to the polls?
Well, I think the important thing to understand is that New Jersey's chief executive, its governor, is perhaps the strongest in the state just based on the powers that the state constitution grants them. They have immense power to invoke emergency authority to stop appropriations that in a way that is dissimilar to how the federal system is constructed. So even winning that governorship, even if you don't have a majority, as Republicans are not likely to have if Cittarelli wins, it can make a huge impact in the way the state is run, in the way the state responds to federal action, and really in the way that the effects of government flow down to the residents of New Jersey.
Yeah,
we played a clip earlier, Nikita, of Donald Trump doing a virtual mm-hmm. rally or town hall on Jack Cittarelli's behalf. I'm hoping you can summarize for our audience the relationship between Cittarelli and Trump and the MAGA base this time around versus 4 years ago versus 4 years before that. I know it's an evolving relationship. How close has Cittarelli kept Trump? Has he kept him a little bit at an arm's length during the general compared to the primary? Give us a lay of the land there.
Well, this is an interesting question, because if we look back to 2021, Jack Cittarelli ran as a moderate against two really pro-MAGA Republicans. He handily won that primary, and he very narrowly lost the general election. This year, he ran really with full-throated support for President Trump and the MAGA movement, though that has come through less in the general election than it did in the primary. And the same way where you might have seen the president in a previous cycle show up and do a rally for Cittarelli, this year he's doing a telephone town hall or a telephone rally. It's not really the same sort of same level of involvement, and it's not likely to have the same level of impact. Now, obviously, Trump is fairly unpopular in New Jersey. That's been the case ever since he emerged out onto the political stage in 2016. And Cheryl has really made Cittarelli's support for Trump and her opposition to Trump's policies the centerpiece of her campaign.
How necessary, quick follow-up to that, Nikita, is how necessary are those Trump voters? I mean, and I'm assuming that, you know, the president sort of getting on the phone is to rally those MAGA, that MAGA base to come out for Cittarelli. How important are those? How reliant is Cittarelli on those voters? And how big of a block is that in New Jersey?
Well, there are a couple of things to tackle there. So New Jersey's off-year elections, which we have because we wanted to separate as a state our state issues from federal issues, are lower turnout elections. Yeah. So your base is going to matter more because base voters tend to be more engaged than, for example, independents. Now, there aren't all that many Republicans in New Jersey, at least compared to Democrats and unaffiliated voters. They're only about 1.7 million compared to 2.5 million Democrats and about 2.4 million independents. So if the Trump base doesn't turn out for Cetarelli, Cetarelli just doesn't win the election. So he has to keep these voters in his corner. And I don't really think he's done anything to alienate them in a way that would keep them from showing up today.
We would love to hear from you this hour. We're asking what's motivating you to vote this year. What race or races, local or national, are you watching most closely? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org, YouTube, Facebook. Drop a comment in the chat. Let's bring in a caller now. This is William from New Jersey on the line. Hey, William, you're on Studio 2. What is your question or comment? What are you thinking about on this election day?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Well, I've been a voter since the year 1980. Mm-hmm. I originally was a Republican. I'm now an independent. And I sat out this year. I did not vote because, quite frankly, with the gridlock in Washington, the attack ads on television, I think the system is corrupt and can't be trusted, and I chose not to participate this year. Wow. I'm sorry to say that, first time since 1980.
Wow. And you feel like those national politics trickle down into your state political leaders as well?
Yes, I do. I think they're all connected, and they need to restore trust, and I'm waiting to see that.
Wow. Fascinating call from William in New Jersey. Thank you so much for that insight, sir. William alluded to the nastiness of this Cheryl Cetarelli campaign, threats of lawsuits, attack ads all over the place. You can't watch TV right now in Philadelphia without seeing them. Even for New Jersey, Nikita, has the nastiness of the tone been a surprise, or is it kind of par for the course in a, you know, a big statewide election in New Jersey?
So I'm not surprised to see it get negative, because typically these campaigns do get negative. And I will say that I've seen more negative campaigns. The 2018 race between former Senator Bob Menendez and former Celgene CEO Bob Hugin comes to mind as one that was particularly mudflingy. But there has been a lot of negative campaigning. Candidates have attacked each other based on anything from their purported stances on tax issues to their purported stances on renewable energy and a whole lot of other things. But I'm not surprised to see an attitude like the one that caller just made, because these negative ads really are designed to depress turnout. They're not designed to persuade voters or get voters to come out and vote for your candidate. They're designed to get them to stay home and not vote at all.
Mm. Yeah. By the way, we have a question from Akram on YouTube who says, I had heard that New Jersey was the state to swing most, or second maybe, from Democrat to Republican, something like 15% or more, but I'm not sure. I've heard a good reason as to why. Can you give your thoughts? And so, Nikita, could you talk about this swing that we heard in the last general, from how many people sort of joined the Republican ranks and sort of lay out the reasons why? Thanks, Akram, for that question.
Sure. So there has been a shift in voter registration away from Democrats and towards Republicans. I don't have those exact numbers on hand, but it's something that's been happening for years and hasn't really slowed down, apart from a little bit around the primary when I think Democrats gained some voters for, I think, maybe a month or two around this June. That said, and I'm sorry, I've actually forgotten the initial part of this question.
Well, sort of what is that swing from Democrat to Republican look like? And then some of the reasons why people sort of left the Democratic Party or, become Republican.
Sure. So apart from voter registration, the thing that swing might refer to is last year's presidential results, where Trump got fairly close to winning the state in a way that Republicans really haven't for, I believe, decades. But I will note that those gains were pretty limited to Trump. Mm-hmm. Democrats held all their congressional seats in the state, and they didn't really face major, major losses at, lower level offices, like, say, the counties or even in municipal offices. So I wouldn't say there's been some big tectonic shift. Perhaps there has been, but we need more elections to really figure that out. It could just be that New Jersey voters weren't that excited about Kamala Harris, and they were excited about Donald Trump.
Yep. We asked this hour, what's motivating you to vote this year? Val on Facebook said, why did I vote? Anger. And I'm afraid my vote will be compromised in the future with all that Trump is trying to do. with all the sycophants that he has appointed. So that's Val's commentary there. Edie says, I voted a few weeks ago and I'm in Bucks County, so the sheriff and DA race are crucial. Danny Seisler is running against Fred Herron, who is in cahoots with ICE. I don't want my community to be occupied by government-sanctioned terrorists. That's Edie's comment. Keep those comments coming. 888-477-9499 is the number. The email is studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. We want to know what's motivating you to vote this year, what race or races, local or national, are you watching most closely? Speaking of watching, Nikita, I would love to be a fly on the wall with you tonight as you're watching the results come in. I'm curious if there are bellwether counties, towns, cities that you'll be looking at as like things that are going to tell us what the ultimate result might be. Where will your eagle eye be focused tonight, Nikita?
Sure. So the main thing that I'm going to be looking at least early on into the night, is how turnout looks in the state's largest counties. So this is places like Essex, like Hudson, like Ocean, which are either big Democratic strongholds in the case of the former two, or big Republican strongholds in the latter case. There are also a couple of other counties to watch. Passaic is a great example, where this is a county that last year went for Republicans. They still elected a Democratic congresswoman, but they went for Donald Trump in a way that really the county doesn't do typically. The question I have is whether that is a result of backlash to President Joe Biden's policy on the conflict in the Gaza Strip, or whether that is some broader realignment towards Republicans. My guess is it's probably more of a backlash than a realignment, but it's something that we'll have to see.
Passaic County. Interesting, interesting.
And by the way, speaking of Passaic County, I know the DOJ had announced it was sending election monitors to that county. Also, today we had heard some breaking news about fake bomb threats that included to a number of counties, poll sites, and they were in Passaic County as well. Can you put that in context? And you talked about, you know, Passaic County being such a bellwether. You know, any thoughts on sort of the DOJ attention to it and also these fake bomb threats?
I mean, no one likes to hear about bomb threats being made to polling centers. Unfortunately, this isn't something that's too unusual. Threats are a little rare, but, you know, these sorts of disruptions happen every year and they're usually quickly resolved. In the case of those polling centers, they're either reopened or the voters who would cast their ballots there are being sent to an alternate location. So this shouldn't really have any major effect on people's ability to vote. And then I'm sorry, remind me again the second part of your question.
No, just sort of this attention on these counties, these bellwether counties by the Trump administration and just, you know, on Election Day.
Right. In terms of the election monitors, the type of folk deployed to watch the polls in Passaic County actually have fairly limited authority. They're basically just there as observers. And in some cases, they might not even be allowed into the polling stations proper. They may have to observe the electioneering restrictions that we have here in New Jersey, which prevent you from advocating for anyone on the ballot within 200 feet of a polling place. There's obviously some concern around that, just based on public statements that the president or the administration have made. But really, these observers have fairly limited authority, and they're not the sort of observers that can come in and, I guess, impose some sorts of limits on an election. You need a court order to deploy those. Mm. Administration doesn't have one, and they have not been deployed.
Okay. Speaking of polls, the other types of polls, the horse race polls, it's interesting to look at the what's been happening over the last month or so at these polls, Nikita. I mean, they almost all seem to show a close race, and yet you're hard pressed to find a single one that projects Cittarelli as the winner. I'm looking at the most recent ones listed by the New York Times: Cheryl plus two, Cheryl plus one, Cheryl plus four, Cheryl plus seven, Cheryl plus 10, on and on. What do the political insiders make of the polling in this race? The sort of the consistency of the small Cheryl leads is. It seems notable to me, and usually when you have those small leads, you see some that flip the other way, and there haven't been a ton of those, it seems.
Right. Well, you know, polling in New Jersey, at least in recent years, has had kind of a rocky history.
Okay.
You know, the polls didn't predict that Trump would win the state,
yeah,
or get as close to winning the state as he did last year. They didn't predict that Cittarelli would come as close as he did in 21 to winning the governorship. So people are a little bit wary, especially in the political world, about relying too heavily on these. Now, obviously, they have access to internal polling that they conduct on their own that we don't necessarily see. But my guess is, you know, everyone's running scared because to do otherwise is just a little bit irresponsible when you're this far into a campaign.
Yeah. By the way, we want to remind you, our listeners, you can participate in the conversation. Our question of the day: what's motivating you to vote this year? What race or races, either local or national, are you watching most closely? You can call 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, leave a comment in the chat. We have a caller. We have Gene from Bluebell, Pennsylvania. Gene, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Just a counterpoint to William, who's opting out. William, I just pulled into my polling place now. I'm going to vote. Just a counterpoint, the mischief makers want you to stay home. And believe me, they get their voters out, so their voters are going to make a difference. I'm a veteran. I wore the uniform. So maybe a motivation and something to reflect on. A lot of folks have fought and died to defend our right to vote. That's one thing to think about. The other thing to think about is, again, they want you to stay home. Think about who is, for a second, William, think about who is a politician and who is a public servant, and go out and vote for that public servant.
Thank you so much. That's Gene from Bluebell, Pennsylvania. By the way, David comments, why would you not vote? I think a lot of people heard William's frustration and decision not to vote and wanted to comment on that.
It's always great to get listeners in conversation with one another.
I love
doing that on Studio 2. Mm-hmm. As we get ready to wind down here, Nikita, I am curious for your analysis of kind of the strengths and weaknesses of the Sherrill campaign. We haven't really touched on her campaign much here. The strengths, obviously, she did well in the primary. It was a crowded primary, though, so she just got a plurality of the votes, not a majority. How are sort of the observers assessing her performance in the general election campaign overall?
Sure. If you're talking about folk in the political world or people who watch these races closely or almost, you know, for entertainment in some sense, I do feel like some of them have been dissatisfied with the level of specificity coming out of that campaign.
Yeah.
It does seem like she's a little bit less adept just on the stump or talking with reporters than she was back when she first ran for Congress in 2018. And, you know, there's always some dissatisfaction with the candidate selection at the fringes of the Democratic Party. Sherrill is no exception to that.
And how about the same question for Chitterelli as we get ready to wrap up? What's been the assessment of his performance? He's a veteran at running these campaigns now. He's been doing statewide campaigns for a while. What's the sense of his performance within the things that he can control, right? Not the national politics.
Hmm. Yeah, with Chitterelli, you know what you're getting because you've gotten it before. New Jerseyans know who he is. He's been around. Before he ran for governor initially, he was in the assembly. He was also a freeholder in Somerset County, which, by the way, it's another bellwether. If he gets good performance in his home county, that's good for his campaign generally. But people are already familiar with Chitterelli, so they're not really looking to form an opinion about him apart from, you know, to some degree, the stances that he does take on national issues like the Trump administration and its actions surrounding things like Gateway or the government shutdown and its effect on food aid.
Mm. Yes.
Well, that is Nikita Biryakov, government and politics reporter for the New Jersey Monitor. Thank you for taking the time on this very busy day to speak with us, Nikita, on Studio 2.
Of course. Thanks for having me. You have a great one.
Yeah. And then coming up on the other side of this break, we'll be talking about the big races in Pennsylvania. And everybody's been talking about the judicial retention race. Three Supreme Court justices up for retention vote. They're seeking another 10 years on the bench. They all ran as Democrats 10 years ago. And now a yes or no vote could determine their future. And we want to hear from you. What's motivating you to vote this year? What race or races, local or national, are you watching most closely? Call 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. Keep those comments coming on Facebook and YouTube. And don't go anywhere. We will be right back after the break. This is Studio 2.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. You're listening to the special Studio 2 Election Day 2025 coverage. Congratulations to you, by the way. We're talking about the key races in today's election as voters are making their way to the polls.
We already spoke about the gubernatorial race in New Jersey, and now we want to move over to Pennsylvania, where three state Supreme Court justices are up for retention. And with us in studio is Stephen Caruso, Capitol reporter at Spotlight PA. Stephen, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me. Happy to yap about elections.
Yes. And let's keep yapping with our listeners. What's motivating you to vote this year? We want to know, what races are you watching most closely? Give us a call, 888-477-7499. Email is studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. And let's bring in a caller at the top here.
Yeah.
This is Connie from Chester County on the line. Hey, Connie, you're on Studio 2. What are you looking at this election day? Tell us your thoughts.
I am primarily voting to retain the Supreme Court justices in Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania has worked very hard at maintaining its independence, that we have freedom of choice, that we have not aligned with the current national administration and all its minions. Our governor is working hard, but since we don't have any national elections in Pennsylvania this year, that was the forefront. I'm also working very hard at maintaining as many Democrats at the local level. Chester County, in recent memory, has been a very diverse county, and it, both ethnically and philosophically. And the school districts are good, and we have maintained teaching diversity. Mm-hmm. And I want to keep that going.
All right. Thank you so much,
family.
Connie from Chester County. Appreciate
you,
the thoughts. So Connie's voting for this judicial retention race here in Pennsylvania. And Stephen, you were out this morning talking to folks at the polls. This is a very unusual race. Mm-hmm. And I don't use the word unprecedented often, but I think pretty close to unprecedented, sort of the strategy by the Republicans to try to, in one fell swoop, potentially remove three justices who ran originally as Democrats. And part of what makes this race maybe hard to comprehend for the average voter is that you're not voting for one candidate or another. You're voting up or down on three state Supreme Court justices. So in your conversations with folks this morning at the polls, was there a broad understanding of what folks were voting for and why? Was there any confusion out there? I've heard the speculation that people might think they're voting for the U.S. Supreme Court as opposed to the state. Just curious what you heard from voters.
I was pretty happy, because it seems like maybe all of those text messages and mailers and TV ads and digital ads, and we could go on, worked. A lot of people seem to know what they were voting for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of Democratic voters who I talked to, registered Ds, a few independents, who were like, look, I think the court's done a good job. Some concern about uncertainty of, in one fell swoop, getting rid of justices, potentially up to three, and leaving the court with just four people with a lot of important things coming up, say like the, next year's gubernatorial race. I also met some people who, even one person who self-described as a conservative Democrat, who said that, I'm really upset with Democrats right now. I wish they fought harder, and I'm voted no on all of them. Another woman who identified as pro-choice, but said that she was so upset about the COVID lockdowns that she voted no on all three as well. So I didn't, as much as I think, there was a lot of chatter that folks were worried that, like, voters couldn't comprehend what they were going to talk about. And I definitely heard people who were frustrated at the number of ads they got.
One woman
literally said, I put everything to spam whenever she got text messages. It seems like folks kind of knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
A-plus work by the voters and the people who educate them. Does that mean we should give ourselves a round of applause?
Yeah, we're part of that.
We did a whole show on
this.
Yes.
Jerry did a forum.
And I want to talk about what would happen, because I know folks who probably may have heard, some of the ads. They may have seen a forum, but I don't think people really understand what could happen if, and one fell swoop, three justices are not retained, what it would do to the actual court itself.
Yeah, so the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has seven members. Right now it's a 5-2 Democratic majority. If the three were to lose retention today, that means they are kicked off the court by the end of the year. They no longer rule on anything. They're not there. So there'd be two Democrats and two Republicans. Divided government is one of those things that sounds great in theory, and I think Americans tend to talk about like they want, but looking at Harrisburg, there hasn't been a lot of ability for people to get to agreement there. With two Democrats and two Republican justices, I'm not a lawyer, but having talked to a handful, having heard from a handful, I believe the concern is just you could get really weighty issues, like, say, related to Pennsylvania's election law. Can a county do this or that? And the judges will just deadlock and say, we don't have a conclusion on this. And then there's no precedent. There's no final say on this was okay for you to do or not do. And that just leads to a lot of uncertainty in a state and that has a lot of legal uncertainty on really key things like election law, for instance. So that's the concern. And they wouldn't be replaced for at least another 2 years via election. Another option would be the governor and the Republican state Senate at this point agree to replacements via appointment. But I will point you back to what I was saying about dysfunction in Harrisburg. They can't agree on a budget, let alone, I think, three Supreme Court justices or even one.
It's a lot. Yeah.
So this has to be, I think, maybe the hardest race to handicap in a long, long time, because we talked about the unusual nature of the up-down vote, the fact that there's three all at once. I saw one poll that tried to capture voter sentiment. I think it was Franklin and Marshall, maybe it was Quinnipiac. I get those flipped sometimes, but most people seemed like undecided in that poll. Do the insiders have any sense of how they think this might go with the judicial retention votes?
So retention votes usually are automatic yeses.
Right. Historically.
I think you have to keep that as your prior. I think that most people going into this in politics, DNR, were kind of assuming it's a heavy lift. The only time a justice has lost is because there was widespread grassroots dissatisfaction with Harrisburg and folks took it out on those judges. So with that said, I think Democrats are pretty optimistic. I think they like the fact that turnout's on their side. Look, Republicans even in their conservative messaging from groups like Commonwealth Partners even tried to lean into this, like messages that they thought would appeal to Democrats to get them to vote no, talking about, term limits, which are broadly bipartisan, support for that. I'd say, talking about defend women, stand up for democracy, term limit the Supreme Court. So, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think the expectation
they were
always
trying to get people to vote no with Democratic messaging.
Yeah. So, like, I think the idea was always more Democrats would come out.
Yeah.
And I think that has always made Democrats feel confident. And I would also note that Republicans have really stopped spending on this race.
Yeah. Let's get into that. Yeah. Because you were trying to dig into the numbers on spending. And first of all, it's like
they dumped early. Yeah. Spent early and then stopped.
And then they said, but also it's very opaque and we don't exactly know who's spending what because of some, let's say, some interesting intricacies in the way all the reporting works. But from what we know, Stephen, what does the spending pattern look like in this race?
Well, it was a good amount of Republican money up front, conservative money, trying to vote, get people to vote against retention to both their base and also to Democrats. And then since then, a tidal wave of money from Democratic interest groups, as one operative told me, to almost like inoculate their voters. Funny way to put it, but that's how they talk about it. And it seems like that's mostly worked. Like, I have mostly been getting mailers or things that appear pro. I've mostly seen them that appear pro. Digital ads. David Wecht has been on my TV a few times. Yeah. While trying to watch Netflix. So I think that means that, like, and I've seen very little Republican ads since then. So, I think that at some point, these big groups that spend on money, they don't have endless money. You kind of, if there's a hint that someone's pulling back, I take that as a hint that maybe they don't see this race as winnable as they once did.
Yeah, they're cutting bait, maybe.
But also, look, again, this is a weird race. I was out there talking to voters who, I think by profile, you'd say, oh, you're going to be a yes in retention, right? And they were no. It's a hard to handicap race, but I know Democrats are confident, and we shall see what the voters end up saying.
Very interesting. I want to bring in another caller. We have Dick from Queen Village on the line. Dick, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yes, I'd like to disagree with the former caller who said he was downtrodden by the negativity of the race and wasn't going to vote. I don't. I'm in favor of the. I'm interested in the judges' vote that's going on in Philly. But I think the important thing is that this is one of the things we have left in our democracy, is our privilege and the significance of our vote. Trump wants to discount that. He wants to say that the voting is illegal and people don't really care. I do care about the vote of individual people, and that's why I'm going to vote.
Thank you. That's Dick from Queen Village. Ruth says, I've missed only two elections since 1971 when I was in the first group of people who could vote at age 18. Mm-hmm. I registered the day after my birthday and despite moving all over the place, have registered and voted all but twice. I am concerned about the elections in Pennsylvania Supreme Court and Virginia and New Jersey's governor's races because of the high quality of the Democrats and the much lower quality of the Republicans. So a lot of folks really wanting to exercise their right to vote today.
I'll read this comment from Kevin. I'm still trying to wrap my head around how the Save Our Democracy crowd is so enthusiastically campaigning to prevent an election for the Supreme Court. If this was about democracy, wouldn't you want the people to vote more rather than less? I think Kevin's saying that you should reject the judges in this election so there can be a future election for judges. So that's Kevin's thought process there. If you want to add your thoughts, studio2@whyy.org is where you go to leave an email. You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. We haven't really touched on if indeed people are going to be voting on issues in this state Supreme Court election, in particular decisions that the justices made over the last 10 years. What are the ones that might be the most animating for voters? I mean, we've got abortion, school funding, elections. It's all out there. Is there a sense of which of these might be the ones that voters really glom onto?
I mean, the one specific ruling that I heard from somebody was COVID. Rulings backstopping Governor Tom Wolf during the COVID pandemic.
Emergency powers, yeah.
And so... That was one that was a hard no for her. Otherwise, though, I mean, I think the fact is this court did open the door to ruling out abortion. Obviously, that's been a huge issue for Democrats. They've been leaning into that in their messaging around most races, but particularly judicial races. I didn't hear that specifically, but I heard waves at it from multiple people. I think that in many ways, like, I don't know if people regularly think about the rulings of the state Supreme Court, but they're definitely impacted by them. They're things that myself as a nerd and other government nerds are like, you know, pore over, try to read line by line, figure out what they're saying and what you can do with that ruling if you're, you know, a lawyer trying to argue another case. Most people feel the results. And, you know, what I heard from a lot of people is just they like the way Pennsylvania is and they think the courts, the judges deserve to be bringing the court again.
Yeah, so interesting. I want to talk quickly about some of the down ballot races, Stephen, because, you know, we do have the Philadelphia DA's race. There's a DA race in Bucks County. There's also a sheriff's race. Anything you're paying attention to down ballot besides, you know, the big race on the Supreme Court?
I love my retention races. You know, one thing that's interesting in Bucks County, you mentioned the sheriff race between Danny Seisler and Fred Herron. I mean, Herron, the incumbent, has made deals with the program that ICE has to allow for local training of law enforcement for them to participate in immigration enforcement. You know, that's become a big issue up there. I think that's interesting to see almost as a bit of a referendum on, you know, ICE's involvement in local politics and local law enforcement. I think that's fascinating. As for the DA's race, in Philadelphia, you know, this is what Krasner attempting his third term. He has his former primary opponent now running as a Republican. I'm certainly interested in what happens there. I don't know if Krasner has been challenged a few times and hasn't lost yet. I'm curious if this is the one that makes a difference. We'll see.
Going back to this, the retention vote, just for a moment as we start to wrap up, I guess this feels like a little bit of a mini pivot point in state politics, where if the no crowd can get this thing through, then all of a sudden, anytime there's a retention vote, there's now like a roadmap for like, let's spend money and try to get a no vote on a Supreme Court justice. Where I feel like in the past, even, and tell me if I'm wrong, people kind of looked past these races because they felt like it was just too big a mountain to climb to get a no vote in a retention race. Does this feel like the result here could either persuade or dissuade people from trying to focus in on these types of races in the future? Kind of a test case, you know?
I definitely think it's a test case. I don't know if anyone thought it was a big mountain to climb. I think this is more about norms. I think this was more about, like, we have the retention system we have from the 1960s Constitution the state has. Pennsylvania's been electing judges since the 1850s, basically because they saw it as a check on it being an appointed system where politicians should put their friends on the bench to agree with everything they did. So we've been electing judges since then, which obviously has its fans and not fans. I've talked to a voter today who said, I don't know why we're electing these guys. So retention was meant to be this compromise of, okay, so, you know, we're going to vote in partisan elections to get them on the bench. But then this race, because it's just a yes or no on them, you're hoping voters, like, take a look at their record. Try to, like, you know, talk to people, talk, you know, understand what they're doing. Because judges are a little bit different in our system. Like, we hold them up to a higher standard. It's supposed to be, you know, beholden to the law, not their ideology, not what they think is right, but what is supposed to be there already written. And the idea of retention was just, you know, so you judge them by that. They're not going to have another candidate saying, well,
it's like an election without the partisanship, ideally.
And it's supposed to be for stability, and they can't really even campaign. So it's such a strange rule here in Pennsylvania.
It's very strange. We've had the system for a while. No one has tried it except for that one time in 2005. And that's a whole other chapter. Mm. That's a whole other episode. And that did succeed. So and the only thing I'd say, though, is that I think some of it is like, this is a test case, definitely. Do people want to go down this path of making every single retention a partisan fist fight? They could. Would that be good for our democracy? That's a conversation we all have to keep having. I mean, one thing I'm really looking at is when there have been judges retained, it's been a pretty uniform. They get like, you know, 70-30, 65-45, or 35.
How close will it be?
But like across the state, every county basically votes about that ratio. I'm curious, in this election, are we going to see red counties against retention and blue counties for retention? Mm. If we see that, we're kind of starting heading down the path of like retention seen as a partisan fight.
Yeah. So the margin might matter in terms of projecting forward how likely we are to see another race like this in the future.
Potentially.
Yeah. All right. A great perspective from Stephen Caruso, one of our favorite guests here at Studio 2, Capital reporter at Spotlight PA. Thanks for coming in studio today, Stephen.
Thanks for no commentary on the Yankee jacket.
Yes. And sorry, John.
You want commentary on the Yankees jacket, Stephen? I can give that to you.
Wanted to point it out. By the way, John from Easton, sorry we could not get to you. I know you were on the line. Please listen again and call back another day. And thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg on Election Day.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett on Election Day. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you tomorrow.